Welcome to Food, Farms, and Chefs radio show, where we highlight everyone from the top industry leaders to startups and farmers that make it all possible with Chef Jean Blum and photojournalist Amaris Pollock.
Hi, and welcome back to Food, Farms, and Chefs. And I'm very happy to share with all of you and introduce all of you to Robert Dumont, who is the owner and chef behind Farmstead Foods. Robert, thank you for joining us on Food, Farms, and Chefs.
Thanks for having me. I'm honored to be here. Appreciate you guys giving me a shot.
Of course. Now, you know, like we said off camera, you've listened to a couple of the shows, so you kind of know the gist of what I do. But I like giving your origin story of like how you came about in the culinary industry, how you, you know, who inspired you, where you studied, and, you know, how you started.
I like to call it the Forrest Gump story of my culinary experience. The food life chose me. I didn't really choose it in a way. I just kind of kept gravitating to the kitchen. Even when I was a little kid, I just always felt safe in the kitchen. And as high school started to end, you're getting questions about what you're going to do with your life. And you don't really know. My mom said you could work in food. You know, you've been dishwashing since, you know, you were 15. Why don't you do that? And then when high school ended, she kind of was like, all right, you got to do something with your life. I'm not going to let you sit here and just cook away and do nothing and work at Bob Evans forever. So either get out or go to school. So I was like, all right, I guess I'll go to culinary school. So I went down to Baltimore International Culinary College.
Okay.
Graduated in 1996. Came back to Philadelphia and worked in fine dining for a little bit at the Striped Bass, the Zanzibar Blue, the Warwick Hotel. And I was 21 and I was tired of winter. I said, let's go to Florida. It's warm down there, you know? So I went down there for about 4 or 5 years. And then, my father got sick. So I decided to come back home and, you know, I worked in Atlantic City at Caesars for a little bit. And then I got tired of the whole restaurant kind of cycle of things. And I decided, I needed to get out. So I went into, prepared foods, you know, like Wegmans, Whole Foods, that type of stuff, and started running their prepared foods department in a place called Circus Food Town. And then I met a girl that took me back to DC, and I worked for Restaurant Associates. I worked on the National Mall at the Natural History Museum, the National Gallery of Art. I helped reopen the American History Museum. I was there for Obama's inauguration. I've never seen so many people in one place at one time. And I will tell you, the best way to clear a crowd is just scream hot soup. They will part no for this.
I mean, nobody wants to get hit with hot soup.
No. And then I went back into retail food again. I worked for a company called Balducci's Food Lovers Market in McLean, Virginia. And then the girl I was with, she finished school and she said, we're going to Philadelphia. And I said, oh, it's been 20 years. I guess, sure, it's time to go back home. And I said, I don't want to work for anyone else anymore. So I said, I'm going to start this company called Farmstead Foods, and had no money, no idea how to do it. But thankfully, I met a family, basically a distant family member who had just opened a share space called the Bridesburg Commissary, where it was about 10 different food trucks in there. And I just, you know, started being in there and I saw what the food trucks were doing. And I always kind of had the idea, like, I'm a caterer, but it just seems so hard to like pack all this stuff up, put it in a van, take it to a strange place, set it up. It's not always hot. It's not always the best. You know, you forget things. You don't have it. I said, if I had a truck that had a kitchen in it, I could just roll up to these parties and make all the food there. It'll be fresh. It'll be hot. I'm not invading anybody's house or taking over their kitchen or, you know, trampling in and out of their garage or their driveway. We just set up and we're there and I don't have to do anything with them. I don't need their electricity. I don't need their water. We have our little kitchen on wheels and we make it rock and roll. So that's what I've been doing. We got the truck 5 years ago. I started Farmstead Foods in 2014. 14, so 10 years coming up on our 10-year anniversary. But,
oh, wow. Are you going to do anything special for the anniversary celebration?
No, I don't. It just kind of like came up on me and it just...
Hey, listen, congratulations, because there's a lot of people who, you know, struggle to get off the ground running with a startup and, you know, food trucks, people who want to invest in themselves and, you know, own a food truck don't realize how much goes into owning one. I have a friend who used to be the VP of one of the food truck coalitions. And so he's introduced me to like some of the costs, you know, for the startup of a food truck. It's not cheap. No. And, you know, and so it is an investment and it's a feat for you to have been running and been successful for a period of 10 years.
Yeah. And especially through all of the changes in the world. Thankfully, I thank God that we had gotten the truck right before all of the craziness happened, because I don't know what we would have done without the truck. It was so weird in the beginning. Everything shut down. We didn't know where we were going to take the truck. All of our normal places, there was nobody there to feed. And I'm like sitting at home and I'm freaking out. And I'm like, what are we going to do? How are we going to pay our bills? How are we going to keep this thing afloat? And then it just dawned on me, like, everybody's at home. And we had done an event at a high rise apartment complex earlier in the year. And I said, let me reach out to them. And I reached out to a few other ones. And I just started like focusing on like dense places where I knew a lot of people lived and like I could reach a lot of customers. And then I just started talking to property managers. I said, we'll come out. I'll give you a menu. People can email us, schedule their time for the pickup. They don't have to. They can pay online, and everything was no contact. And then it just kind of rolled from there. We became the safe catering option because everything was single serve. Nobody wanted to eat off of a buffet anymore or anything like that. So whatever small parties that were gathering, we were the answer to getting them food safely. So it all kind of worked out for us. You know, it really is a blessing, but
yeah,
it was a lot of hard work. It still is a lot of hard work.
I'm sure. And I mean, also, you know, props to you for being able to kind of manage that, you know, that situation, just because I know a lot of restaurateurs were kind of just like, what do I do? So you had the ability, it's the capability of actually, you know, going to places too. So you weren't just in a set location. So that probably was an added bonus for, you know, for the whole gamut of the shutdowns and, you know, the codes and everything that you had to follow. But also helpful to the people in the complex too, because there are elderly people that are like, I can't go out and, you know, go grocery shopping and, you know, right. I can't fix my own meals. So like you were available on site, you know, for those individuals.
Right. Yeah, I was. So yeah, so certain property managers were like, you want to do what? Are you crazy? Like, and then other ones were like, yes, this is great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And then, you know, the customers, some were hesitant. And then, but as we did it more and more and they talked to the other neighbors and it just kept growing and growing. And it was great while it lasted. And then, you know, things change. It's constantly pivoting, you know, even more now than ever.
Yeah. And, you know, the other bonus is, you know, on your site, you say you're locally locally source your ingredients, which even during the pandemic, like that's also helping to support those, you know, businesses as well and farms and whatnot. And also it's offering, you know, the freshest food available. So I don't know if there's particular purveyors or farms or whatnot that you might want to plug, like of, you know, this is some company that I've worked with or a farm that I've worked with, like feel free.
Milk House Farm was instrumental in the beginning when we first started. What is it? Red Cat Farm, you get stuff from. As we grew, I had to start working with some purveyors. So I worked with, Giordano's down on Front Street. So they have their own farm in Jersey that they get a lot of stuff from. And then they also do the sourcing for me, so I don't have to keep running around, because that was eating up a lot of my time and gas and all this stuff. It was great when we first started and we were at the farmers markets in the beginning. because I could just put the orders in and they could bring them to the market with me, and then take the ingredients back and turn them into meals, and then bring those meals from those farmers to that same market. So it was a very like reciprocal, you know, thing that was going on. But as the business grew, the farmers markets just weren't sustainable enough. They were eating up too much of our time. So we kind of put those to the back burner. We definitely want to go back again. Mm-hmm. It's trying to manage all of the things that make us stay afloat and not getting distracted by the ones that feel good, but don't always necessarily put the dollars into the bank account at the end of the day. So yeah. Our bread and butter is the catering. We live and die off of that. We're getting ready to roll back into food truck catering season. This week's a big week for us. I have two events back to back tomorrow. One's a breakfast, and then rolling right out into a lunch with that. And then another one on Thursday and Friday. And then a big one on Saturday for turn five, the big car show that's going on. We'll be out there eating at least 400 people, maybe 600.
So, wow. That's a large crowd for you to have to feed. Now, I'm going to, for the listeners who are just, you know, tuning in on the radio or streaming us live, you can't see this, but in the background, on the video aspect of it, you can see he's sitting in front of a very shiny, nice, gleaming kitchen. So, Robert, like, where are you for, you know, physically located that you prep all the food, and what are some of the things that people, if, you know, they want to reach out to you for catering or whatnot and hire you, what can they expect?
So like I said, we started at the Bridesburg Commissary, and as those commissary owners, as our business grew, their business grew in tune, and they opened up another building, and then they went to a different property and opened up two more buildings, one with an event space, and then also commissary space, private kitchens to work out of, and then 20 or so share spaces to work out of. So it's called the Culinary Collective. It's in Northeast Philadelphia, right off of the Bridge Street exit of 95, Bridge and Tacony Street, in the old Frankfurt Arsenal. So this whole property is just kind of like a rebirth of just places. So, you know, instead of knocking it down and turning it into high rises or something like that, they want to keep it going. So they put an elementary school here, a high school here. There's these two culinary collective spaces. There's coffee roasters. All kinds of just artistic type of people working out of the space. So it's really great, very convenient to 95. So we're kind of like centralized that we can get out to Bucks County, Montgomery County, Delco County within an hour. And that's really where our core of clientele are. We don't do so much in the city with the truck. It's just a little tough to kind of pull up to your row home or something like that. If you have a nicer house out closer to the burbs, then we might be able to help you out. But we mainly focus in Bucks County, Montgomery County, a little bit in Delco and Chester. You can find us. We do pop up from time to time at different breweries or fundraisers and things like that. We will be at Newtown Brewery in Newtown on April 28th. We'll be at North Wales Elementary, Dine and Donate on May 2nd, Charleston Elementary in Malvern for their fundraiser. And then on May 11th, we'll be at 10-7 Brewing, and May 17th, Well Crafted Brewing. If you wanted to have us come and cater for you, you could reach out to us at www.FrankPhilly.com. Or you could follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Farmstead Food Truck.
That's perfect. Thank you. And but we have a few minutes left before I can let you go. So yeah, sure. What are some of the focuses? Because you've worked all over the East Coast. Yeah.
And yeah. So that was one of the hardest things, was trying to like nail it down, right? Because you could do everything, right? And then the customer will ask you, well, what do you do? And you say, well, what do you want? You know, and they're like, I don't know. I want you to tell me. So when I started, I had to kind of like figure out what it is that we do, because I can do everything. And we'd like to have something for everyone. So my wife is Peruvian and I'm from Philadelphia. Our signature, what do you call that? Fusion dish is a chicken cheesesteak empanada.
Okay.
Our other big seller is our barbecue brisket. So I'm not a big fan of smoke. I don't like smoked meats that much. So we do ours braised and it really highlights the flavor of the meat. And then what makes it so good is that I braise it for 12 hours. So it's super tender when you get it. And we do like a nice thick chunk of meat and then sear it back on the grill. So it gets that like burnt and crispy crust to it. So you get that crunch on the outside and that juiciness of flavor of the just the meat and the barbecue sauce on the inside. We like to have things for vegans and gluten-free people. So our falafel ball covers that. Homemade chickpea, parsley balls, fried over greens, avocado, black beans or white beans, depending on what we have that day.
You're making me hungry.
And our house-made vinaigrette, oregano, red wine, extra virgin olive oil, garlic, that type of stuff. And then, you know, we have fan favorites like our truffle mac and cheese. Everybody loves French fries, sweet potato fries. We tend to mix things up a little bit depending on the season. So in the summertime, we'll add our shrimp stuffed avocado. So it's almost like shrimp ceviche style, but not like we grill the shrimp, but then it's marinated in the lemon, the lime. And we take an avocado, cut it in half, score it out, and then take our shrimp salad, plop that bad boy right in the two halves over some salad greens for you. Super refreshing treat in the summer. Everybody tends to love that one. And then in the winter, what I'm trying to do is put Philly on the map, the chili map. So I have what's called Philly chili.
Okay.
And people ask me what makes it Philly. And I say it's got a lot of beef in it because we love the beef and we love our beef here in Philadelphia. So big chunks of brisket, top round chuck roast, some peppers and onions, some white beans and tomatoes, and then our chili spice.
Nice. Now, do you vary the spice level? Because I know some people like it super spicy. Some people like it mild, where it's like,
That was one of the things that I had trouble with in the beginning, like making that recipe, because like the chili heads are like, oh, it's got to be hot, you know what I mean? But then everybody else is like, I want to taste it, I don't want my mouth to burn. So it's a mild chili, but what I do is we pickle our own jalapenos. So if you want it to go a little hotter, you know, we just throw our home. Yeah, just add the homemade pickled jalapenos on there for you.
All right.
We'll light it back.
Well, that made me very, very hungry. And I might stalk you a little bit now that please. I know you're at some beer, you know, breweries and whatnot. But for our listeners out there, by all means, if he just made you hungry too, follow Farmstead Foods. So thank you so much for joining us on Food Farms and Chefs, Robert.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, and we will be right back after this short break.
To become a sponsor of Food Farms and Chefs and have your business or event promoted on two radio stations in Philadelphia that play on Tuesdays during Drive Time Radio and on a station in New York on Fridays at 1 p.m., you can email us at foodfarmsandchefs@yahoo.com, ibfoodie2@yahoo.com, or arpolicus@gmail.com.
Hi, and welcome back to Food Farms and Chefs. And I'm very excited to have Nana Whedon join us, who is the owner of Taco Heart in East Passyunk. Nana, welcome to Food Farms and Chefs.
Thank you so much for having me.
So I was reading up and like looking up your history or whatnot. That's part of something that I do on a regular basis, but I don't want to spoil alert and, you know, tell our listeners your history. So I usually always gain your origin story. So how did you get into the field?
I'm from Philadelphia. My first restaurant job was as a busboy when I was 16 on Germantown Avenue at Under the Blue Moon, no longer. And I fell in love with working in restaurants. I worked in restaurants through college. I did one brief stint in an office and swore it off forever. And I worked at a place in Cambridge, Massachusetts, where I discovered that I want to own restaurants, whether or not I am a famous musician, which is what I was trying to do, or not. I want to be in restaurants. I love the theater of it. I love serving people. I love getting to know people. I love bringing people together and watching people come together. And when I was 24, I decided this is something that I wanted in my life. When I moved to Austin in 2004, I started working at a pizzeria that's more like a restaurant that serves pizza. It sort of had high-end service for a pizzeria. And I fell in love with that place. I got an education as the right-hand person to the owners for 15 years, helped grow that into a small local chain, which is now expanded to Houston, and left 15 years later with a part ownership stake in that company. Came to Philadelphia during the pandemic, returning home, and opened a bagel shop with my buddy Phil Korschak, who had worked with me in Austin. That got a lot of notoriety and unfortunately closed fairly quickly, but it was a beautiful, beautiful space. And when I came back to Philadelphia, my dream was to bring fresh flour tortillas to the Northeast, something I had not grown up with. When I got to Austin in 2004, I was crestfallen that I could not get a bacon, egg, and cheese on a Kaiser roll. But after about 6 months, somebody introduced me to breakfast tacos, and here I am.
Yeah. And I have to say that I love a good bacon, egg, and cheese on a Kaiser. And like, especially when I always order it with extra cheese because I love it oozing out. So I feel your crestfallen, love of that. But I'm sure like with the tacos, I mean, and it is Taco Tuesday. So, nod to that. And you're perfect for like making that available. But, I'm sure you acclimated to the breakfast tacos and burritos and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, when I got to Austin, I was a ketchup on eggs guy, as controversial as that is. And I was just so sad about having to put salsa on eggs. And then once I did, it was salsa on eggs. I cannot start my day without something a little bit spicy now.
Yeah.
And then I fell in love with the tortilla, which is sort of the bread of that region. And yeah. And I needed it in my life all the time.
Yeah. And I love how, like, because you mention it several times in like different articles or whatnot, but it's like one thing to like hear it. It's another thing to see like the flour tortilla get like heated up where it goes like a big balloon.
Yeah. They inflate into these perfect little globes of steam. I think that it's not understood. Like, I mean, there are other breads in the world that cook this way, but it's the outside of the bread or the dough sears, but then the inside steams. So it has an incredible, not crunchy, but almost kind of crispy, flaky exterior, and then this soft, pillowy interior. And you just can't get that from a store-bought tortilla. It's not the same food product. It doesn't do the same thing. I mean, those of us who grew up with sandwiches in the Northeast, you know that the bread is what makes the sandwich.
Yes.
And it's true about a taco too. And we don't get that. Taco Tuesday is rampant all through the United States on tasteless corn hard shells and store-bought flour tortillas, but there's this whole universe of flavor and feeling that is available if you have fresh flour tortillas or fresh corn tortillas, honestly, but it's totally different.
Yeah. And it like the, correct me if I'm wrong, but the comal mm-hmm. seems to be the same thing that people make crepes on. It looks like it.
So there's a restaurant in LA that is now a pretty quickly growing chain called Home State, a woman from San Antonio. I'm embarrassed that I forget her name, but I look up to her. She has an incredible story. And I just poured over their Instagram to see what they were using in my home experiment. And I found the crepe makers. Like it's an enamel surface. It gets very hot. You don't need a hood over you in the kitchen. Yeah. And these are really important things for me. When I was I've made a lot of tortillas at home and discovered that if you use cast iron, which is sort of the most vibey thing to use, if you burn a tortilla on that cast iron and let it get too hot, you sort of screwed up that surface for the next 5-10 minutes, and it really slows you down. Yeah. And the enamel surface is amazing. I also think that for corn tortillas, nonstick is actually the way to go, but you have to get it super hot so you can destroy your nonstick pans, but it is really, really great for corn tortillas.
Yeah. And I mean, I do love corn tortillas because it gives that the maize gives like a good, a additional flavor profile, and it kind of gives it a little extra sweetness as well. But you know, you can't knock a good flour tortilla.
No, so, and I think that in flour, the although I have used, you know, locally milled flours before, it's really the fat choice.
Yeah.
And your salt level, but your fat choice is really going to make a difference. And people use lard, people use Crisco. We use a 50-50 butter and lard.
I mean, I have to say I'm a huge fan of like of butters, but I understand lard is like easier to come by.
we did it with
Sorry.
Yeah, what were you going to say?
No, I was going to let you did it what?
We did it with 100% butter, and it was too
heavy,
maybe? French. Too light. Too light, actually.
Oh,
too
really?
Too flaky, too delicate, too...
It didn't hold up against the weight of all the ingredients.
It worked great, and they were delicious, but it didn't taste like the tortillas that I fell in love with in Austin. So, and you know, it, for me, there's, you know, millions of people who grew up with flour tortillas as kids. Every single person I know from the Valley of Texas or from Northern Mexico or even from Mexico, but usually corn tortillas, tells a story of being 4 or 5 years old, walking into the kitchen and their grandmother handing them a fresh tortilla off the comal. Without fail, every single person tells that story. I admittedly did not grow up with that story, but as soon as I saw the tortillas inflating on the comal and seeing that little pillowy ball of steam and the comfort of that, and as soon as I ate fresh flour tortillas, I intuitively understood that this was speaking to the 2-year-old little boy inside of me who needed that food and needed to feel that comfort that everybody I knew was talking about. And so I think that's a really, really powerful piece of this. Yeah. That experience.
Yeah. So let's delve into some of your menu items, because before we hopped on, I had mentioned that you have a nice selection of vegetarian tacos and, you know, breakfast tacos, but you also obviously have an array of, you know, carnivore lovers tacos as well. So let's dive into some of the menu options that you offer.
Well, I would say that we specialize and started as a breakfast restaurant for the first year, all breakfast tacos. And that was really my gateway drug into Tex-Mex were breakfast tacos. I mean, because I was missing the bacon, egg, and cheese. I needed a way to start the day. And this scratched the itch and then became an obsession. And I would highlight the migas taco. So migas means crumbs in Spanish. And the idea historically is that you'd have leftover fried tortilla chips that you'd want to stretch and make last into the next day. You throw it in the scrambled eggs with some other stuff, and you get this sort of crunchiness in the scrambled eggs, kind of like putting potato chips in a sandwich, but it has a different consistency. There's a food term that the Bon Appetit crew used for a lot called crispy gonzagi, which is like when you put cereal in the milk, but like a minute later, not after 10 minutes and not after 30 seconds, but like a minute or two later, that perfect texture of the cereal. Yeah. The migas chips do that in the eggs. And that's really what you want from that taco, in my opinion, as a person who fell in love with it. And there's a taco truck, now small chain in Austin, called Veracruz All Natural. Two sisters who own that. And they were recognized for that. I don't want to say that this for sure, but all of my research points to the idea that they're the first people to make it a taco specifically. You could get migas platters for a long time, but they made a taco. Mm. They put it in fresh flour tortillas. They got recognized nationally for that. And it wasn't that long ago that this explosion of the migas taco happened. And I liked breakfast tacos, and I was getting into making tortillas, but that taco changed my life and was there for me when I needed something to comfort me. I find that this whole thing is about comfort and care, and breakfast tacos, especially. You go to sleep, you know, you have a big day tomorrow, but you get to wake up to breakfast tacos and everything is okay. Sort of the way people think about coffee or maybe their bacon, egg, and cheese, as I used to.
Yeah.
And so the migas taco is huge. That's a really, really important one. It's vegetarian, although we do have a meated version with sausage and queso and fresh jalapenos called the Migas Maximus, also inspired by a taco restaurant, a taqueria in Austin called Tyson's Tacos. Okay. And And then, so yeah, I would highlight that for the breakfast. But then we opened lunch in October, and starting with fajitas, which is once again something that I've learned, fajitas are so important to Tex-Mex. They started in Houston. They're not Mexican. They are a true product of Tex-Mex. And same with these breakfast tacos, the way that we serve them, these don't exist in Mexico. This is a Tex-Mex cuisine. And the flour tortillas from northern Mexico and the border, the valley of Texas. And it's really important to me that it's understood that there are Mexican restaurants all around Taco Heart that are doing amazing Mexican food. South Philly Barbacoa is three blocks away.
Yeah.
But this is, you know, this is adjacent and has different flavors. And fajitas. So we centered in on fajitas, and they made that the anchor of our lunch taco offerings.
Yeah.
And yeah. And, but doing it in a taco, not like sizzling platters, because we don't have that capability, unfortunately, but maybe one day. But we made fajita tacos. And then you were talking about vegan. We, you know, there's so much meat centric stuff in Tex-Mex. There's so much pork lard in the beans. There's so much bacon. There's so much barbecue. But we knew we wanted to have vegetarian and vegan options. And we created the Bolden Creek, which is named after a vegetarian cafe in Austin, with black beans and sweet potatoes and weirdly broccoli, which sounded strange to me, but it was definitely the best. We all tasted it. It was broccoli and sweet potatoes somehow is incredible. Huh. And then we put vegan cheese and avocado. There's a down the street from us in the Bach building is this huge old technical high school. There's a vegan cheese company called Bandit that is growing quickly, and we love their vegan cheese. So we use their Bandit vegan cheese. And then we did a vegan taco for lunch named after our kitchen manager, Yannette, who created it. It's guacamole right on the tortilla with roasted sweet potato and cauliflower, and then whole black beans, pico de gallo. And it has a chipotle cashew crema, and it is nice. One of my favorite tacos. And I'm not usually signing up for the vegan options, and it is delicious.
Sounds delicious. Now, we're going to delve into the sauces too, because you offer a variety of sauces. I think three different sauces. And I don't know what the heat index for each one is, but I know that that you use, I'm going to mispronounce it. So it's a pepper that is native to Mexico.
Guajillo?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to mispronounce it, so thank you.
Well, yeah. You want to hear about the sauces? The sauces? Yeah. Okay, so there are three sauces. Once again, sort of like Italian cooking. There are so few ingredients generally in salsas. Now, moles are a whole different thing, where there's, you know, can be up to, you know, dozens, if not more ingredients. But salsas are generally a chili, tomato, tomatillo, maybe some oil, maybe definitely garlic, sometimes onions.
Cilantro.
But it's really like sometimes chicken stock. But it's really, they're really simple, small list. Now, there are hundreds of chilies that you could use.
Yeah.
But whether you do them raw, which ingredients go in raw, boiled, roasted, grilled, makes a huge difference. And sort of like making different kinds of Italian sauces, like there's like, you know, there's four ingredients, but what you do to each ingredient really matters. So I created the salsas that I loved most. There's a tomatillo salsa, which is very mild. It has one chili, serrano chili, for, you know, maybe 40 servings or something like that. Very, very mild. And it's just tomatillos, cilantro, garlic, salt. I think that's it. And we boil the tomatillos and the garlic. Mm-hmm. And then add the cilantro in fresh. And that's the salsa, salt, of course.
Yeah.
And then the roasted tomato guajillo, we put tomatoes, tomatillos, serranos, and serranos in the oven and char them.
Okay.
So you just burn them as it so takes hours, that. Unfortunately.
But it gets that nice smoky flavor into it probably, right?
Yeah. Exactly. So we really want, and like, then we scrape up the pan, like everything that's stuck to the pan, we scrape it up, and that goes, and then you soak guajillos, which are actually not spicy. the serranos, which are getting roasted, are spicy. And then you take guajillos and they have this earthy sort of fruity flavor. And you soak them and then you just blend everything so that you get the right consistency. And that's that salsa. The real trick to that one was figuring out that even though it's red, the guajillos make it very red, the tomatoes make it red, but that it needed tomatillo, which has like this more tangy flavor characteristic. And when it was just tomato, it was too sweet. It almost tasted like a Mexican tomato soup or something like that. But the tomatillo really like brightened it. And you don't know it's there because the color is not there at all.
Yeah.
And then garlic. So that's the roasted. And then the last one, which is super famous in Austin, there's a restaurant called Taco Deli. They're a small chain. I think they started in the late 90s and grew very slowly. There's a lot of noise right now about Torchy's tacos sort of taking over the whole country. Taco Deli predates Torchy's and was the beloved spot for so many. And they're now, you know, they've expanded. Yeah.
I was going to say, we unfortunately ran out of time. So as much as it goes so fast. I know. So unfortunately, like maybe we can have you back on so we can continue this conversation at a later date, but,
went so quickly. I was having so much fun.
I know exactly. But let our listeners know where they can find you and find you online.
All right. We are at 7th and Passyunk in South Philly, two blocks off the Italian Market in the Bella Vista neighborhood. We're open Tuesday through Sunday from 7:30 to 2 during the week and 8 to 3 on the weekends. We are here for catering. We are here for tacos. It's a great hang. We've got 6 seats inside and about 20 outside on nice days. Come see us. Have breakfast tacos. Bring a bottle of champagne and we'll make mimosas with you.
All right. That sounds great. Nano, thank you so much for joining us on Food Farms and Chefs.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we will be right back after this short break.
Join us on Food Farms and Chefs radio show, where we highlight everyone from top industry leaders to startups and the farmers who make it all possible with co-host Jean Blum and Amaris Pollock, with original episodes that debut every Tuesday at 6 p.m. on WWDB 97.5 HD2 and at WWDBAM.com. and on your smart speaker.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Food Farms and Chefs. And I'm very happy to introduce you to the owner of Friends Cafe, Mo Zadeh, who has his location up in North Jersey in New Brunswick. So, Mo, welcome to Food Farms and Chefs.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
It's a pleasure to be with you as well. So, I usually do histories. I look up histories on everybody and to see like where, you know, where they started and any kind of information I can gather. You have very little information out there. So I am very, very excited to have you on the show to share your origin story, like how you came about owning Friends Cafe.
I actually have the whole story on our website. Many, many, many people have referred to it and told me that they read the story and they loved it.
Okay. Well, I apologize because I was trying I was having bad luck looking up your information. So,
We have it all posted.
Okay.
So, but I'll be glad to volunteer any information further that you may need.
Well, by all means, you know, since I obviously couldn't find it, which makes no sense now, but why don't you share with our listeners your history, like how you got started and who inspired you and how you came about, you know, owning the store location that you're in?
Well, thank you for giving me the opportunity and thank you to all your audience. Friends Cafe is actually a cafe that we had plans on opening it for probably about 35 years. So what happened is I am and was in a totally unrelated business. I own a landscaping company. And ever since I married to my wife, beautiful wife, Josephine, we discovered that she is a phenomenal cook and a pastry chef. and she has those talents. And I was often told by many relatives and friends that, hey, Mo, why don't you open up a little bakery shop for Josephine? Because she really, really knows how to bake. She's really phenomenal. So I was like, oh, okay. And I kept it on the back burner. And I was always contemplating, like, do I open it? Do I not open it? And I really never saw the need because I worked as a landscaper. But I was often criticized by everybody that tasted Josephine's cooking and her pastries and all the cakes that she made. And she often made cakes for people, friends, family. They ordered cakes from her. And back in like 2018, a friend of mine that knew about this whole thing, he calls me up. He goes, Mo, here in New Brunswick, there's a location. There's like a old butcher shop that's going out of business, and they're looking to lease the place. Would you be interested for Josephine? I'm like, okay. So I came down. I looked at it. It was a disaster. It was like literally, I mean, it's a story that those cooking shows have, that you go into the kitchen and into the places from like, it was probably about 40, 50 years old.
Oh, wow. So,
but I saw something beyond that. I saw the location. I liked the location. And I thought to myself, I can renovate this to be a real cute cafe. So I brought Josephine and we decided that, yes, we'll go ahead with this. And I signed the lease, and lo and behold, COVID-19 hits. So I paid rent for 2 years until we was able to get some permits from the township to start work. And April 10th of 2021, up the French Cafe, and we've never looked back. We've been going forward with this because, like I said, Josephine, she knows what she's doing.
That's good. And I mean,
so we've been quite a success, thank God. Yeah.
Congratulations on the fact that you not only married somebody who is a wonderful person, but also, you know, has some major talent behind the in the kitchen. So, and the fact that you were able to find a location and support, you know, that dream of both of yours is wonderful as well. Do you still own, just out of curiosity, do you still own the landscaping business?
Yes. I'm still active with the landscaping business, limited, but I'm not very active. So what we do is we just basically do lawn maintenance at this point, and I don't go after any big jobs. We just do the routine service to our old customers. I've been business since 2005. So, yeah, we're still active with the landscaping.
Okay. Now, because you're active in the landscaping business, now, does Friends Cafe have a lot of plant life, like, adorning the environment, the atmosphere?
Actually, the cafe has used the landscaping services quite often. We've actually made a very nice patio outside, and, you know, we leave the planting and the flowering up to Josephine because she also has a green thumb.
So
in fact, it's upstairs. If you like to see, I can walk up there and show you some of it.
It's we'll probably highlight some of the photos in our posts or whatnot, but I appreciate you sharing that information. So just out of curiosity, because I saw from the pictures that I've seen on your Instagram account that you offer a wide array. You don't just offer, because a lot of people think or hear the word cafe and they just think, you know, coffees and teas and like light bites, like croissants or something. But I feel like your wife like went all out, and there's sandwiches and elaborate dishes. And so, you know, and dishes that have more flavor to it too, like that's based in Mediterranean diets. So, you know, What are some of the options that she has to offer that you guys?
Well, the food, the menu is again strictly designed and thought of by Josephine. So, like, we do have some normal items, if you want to say, but the food that Josephine put together is a variety of different flavors and really healthy options. One of our favorites that's a big seller, it's called the Persian rice ball. So it's basmati rice. And then Josephine, you know, we put greens like lettuce, tomatoes, onions, avocados, and your choice of protein. And this this food is a big, big, big popular item. So, like, mostly the college kids, they come to our cafe to study. And it's amazing. It's amazing that it becomes so popular. I mean, we can't keep up with it. They love it. It's really, really tasty, though. It's not, I'm not being arrogant. It is really, really, really flavorful. It's a must try, because you can't just go to any corner restaurant and cafe and find a delicious bowl of food that is not only delicious, but also nutritious and healthy. Real, real good stuff. Yeah.
And in cafes at that, because I frequent coffee shops. I live off of coffee. Like, this is how I function. I function with caffeine. And I know people say that tea has more caffeine than coffee does, but I just really like the flavor of coffee and cold brew and all of that. But I'm not somebody who goes to a restaurant and looks for the atypical Italian restaurant where it's like chicken parm or something to that matter. I'm the person that goes to Mediterranean places or Indian food, like, or Thai, you know, things like that, where it's more flavorful. There's an abundance of variety as far as what they offer on the menus. And I'm not afraid to try something new. By all means. So if there's something on a menu I like that I don't know what it is, I'm like, I don't care. I'm ordering it.
I dare you to come to our cafe. I invite you to come.
I want to. And the thing is, I'm wondering also, like, because you named it Friends Cafe. And I think somewhere along the line, I saw something related to the fact that it's like, based on, like, it's a throwback to the show?
Well, it is a very innocent coincidence here, because, of course, Josephine and my daughter Hannah loved the sitcom Friends. They watched so many of these episodes, and they were really big fans. So when we came up to choose the name, and the name happened to be Friends Cafe, because she wanted to go with that. She wanted to go with something that she liked, I guess. And if you come into the cafe, you realize that the theme is actually very related to the sitcom. We have the couch, the cozy dining room, the bathroom has all the pictures of the different episodes. It's like, okay, you want it to be Friends? So Friends it is.
That's cute. Like, I think that's actually what I was drawn to. Like, when I was like scrolling through, like, you came up on my feed, like, somehow, like, it, the algorithm of social media, like, was like, oh, she'll like this. And I did, I saw it and I was like, oh, I have to bring them on.
But it's a pleasure to be with you.
Of course. Now, you had mentioned, obviously, the rice bowl. So you know, I want to give you a chance to give a nod to some of the other menu items that Josephine has come up with and created and, you know, that are popular, or just, you know, what's your favorite?
My favorite is actually one of these rice balls, because it has the Persian fusion to it. Mm-hmm. Basmati rice with the saffron basmati rice is what I was raised with. So combined with this new idea of refreshing greens and avocados and jalapeno peppers, if somebody likes to hold off on that, they can hold off on that. But then my favorite is the steak Persian rice bowl, because I also must tell you that choosing the ingredients, I always go for premium and never cheat the ingredients of our food. So our steak is the Black Angus Ireland steak. It's very, very, very good. So my favorite is the steak ball.
Okay. Now, you are a cafe, so I want to also mention the fact that, you know, coffee is obviously a heavy thing. So what do you have, a purveyor that you work with, or do you roast your own beans?
Well, that's another good point here. Choosing, not being an expert when I opened on coffee, so I put my trust into what the popular demand was, and I searched. In the beginning, I was using an Italian brand, which we're going to stay off the air with that, but it was a very popular and good brand coffee. And I researched to find better coffee, even though the one I used was very expensive and it was a good Italian roasted coffee. But
then, I feel like I know what it is.
Yes, Lavazza. I was using Lavazza. So, but then... then I met this entrepreneur in New Jersey that brought their business from Italy to New Jersey also to distribute. In fact, they do distribute worldwide, and their coffee is roasted in Sicily. And I tried their coffee, and I felt like it was really, really good, and I'm a big coffee drinker. And we started going with them, and ever since we started with them, everybody has loved our coffee. Our coffee is not roasted in-house. It's roasted in Sicily, but it's a very, very high brand, and it's imported from Italy. And I have never had any complaints. It's strong. It has a good kick, and we have different grades.
Yeah.
We have the special. We have the
blonde. The drip.
We have the drip coffee. We have a variety of their selection. And we're doing very well with it.
Now, can I ask who that is, or are you keeping that one secret?
Yeah. No, it's not a secret. I wish them success. It's the Coffee Emporium.
Okay.
They're located up in North Jersey, and they import from Italy, and they distribute to a lot of cafes in New Jersey, New York, in a lot of different areas.
Yeah. Now, circling back to your cafe, Friends Cafe, do you also do any catering for, you know, people that come in that are like, oh my God, I love this. Like, can I have you cater like a small party or something to that matter?
You know, I must tell you, like I told you, we was very inexperienced in 2021. When we opened the cafe, we did not explore our options in terms of catering to people. We never, even to this day, have spent $1 in advertising. And when I tell you we don't even advertise, we really don't even advertise. Thank God, knock on wood, we're doing well. But I have yet to find avenues to go out there and expose ourselves to create more catering. I know the potential for our cafe is very high. I know we could cater to more people, but we really don't have that much catering business because I've never really gone after it. Because, you know, from an old saying that a head that doesn't hurt, don't put a bandage on it. So, like, I never saw the need to be catering, but oftentimes people call and they say, we're doing a wedding. Can you bake us a cake, or can you give us lunch to our office? If they do make a phone call and place an order, we do. But, you know, I actively am not after catering.
You're not. Business. Yeah. That's not your focus. It's mostly
if anybody could help me with that part of the business, I'm open. I would be looking to see the ways to explore and expose ourselves to that arena.
That's perfect. I might be able to hook you up with somebody that would know, would have a lot more knowledge as far as that's concerned. But for the time being, let our listeners know where to find you online, where they can find you in person, and maybe your favorite coffee.
My favorite coffee, unfortunately, I can't drink it because it's too sweet. My favorite coffee is too sweet.
Okay.
We have a coffee here that we make hot or iced, and we name our own different menus. My favorite one is called Ice Twix Latte, which has like a flavor of the Twix chocolate.
Yep, that sounds sweet.
I can't drink too much of that because it's, I'm type 2 diabetes.
Okay, yes.
You can find us on Instagram under Friends Cafe _NB for New Brunswick. So Friends Cafe _NB for New Brunswick. And that's how you can find us on Instagram.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us on Food Farms and Chefs, Mo.
It was a pleasure.
All right. And tune in every single week as we have a brand new episode of Food Farms and Chefs.
To listen to the rest of Food Farms and Chefs, tune your HD radio to 97.5 WPEN HD2 or stream live from WWDBAM.com.